All right, welcome to episode 15. We've got that far of Honest to a Malt with Mike, myself, Duncan, and this week featuring Dan Humphrey of Somerton Club.
And now it's time for the main event of the podcast. Introducing first, a whiskey entrepreneur forged in St. Albans, a man who's proudly half Austrian, not Australian, you say gross. Got not good day, mate, a keen traveler of countries, and so perhaps also time, who will skate rings around you before whipping up a new dish in the kitchen. What's he cooking at Somerton Club? Something delicious! Dan Humphrey!
Hello.
Ahoy.
How are we? I'm grand. How are you doing?
We're very good. Very good. Well, it's a real pleasure to have you on, Dan. Thanks very much for making time.
Second guest ever.
Yeah.
Whoop, whoop.
So it's usually a tradition for Mike to do the episode title, so people know what we're going to talk about. So, Mike, what's it called today?
Summer Slappers featuring Somerton, the Black Fox Remix.
Very DJ.
That's going to be a hell of a lot to type.
Yeah. Get those fingers
really
working.
It's a little 100-odd characters.
Yeah,
we're going to do the...
That'll be just a tweet, we'll have the title and that's it. And the rest is just a mystery.
We might have to fit some of it into the description, we'll work it out later. So we're doing Jeff Whiskey Slaps, or Jeff Slaps. I hope that's not also his, if he does online dating, I hope that's not his online dating tag.
I mean, he's never getting swiped on if his name's
probably
Jeff
not.
Slaps.
Anyway, he was kind enough...
Or get loads from a certain part of the community.
Very niche. That. So he's given us a shout out and done five summer whiskies. I love his YouTube channel, just to be clear. I love what he does. Well worth checking out. Very entertaining. Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to do our five summer whiskies. We're going to do usual what's in our glass, what's been annoying us. And we're also going to have a wee chat with Dan, which is going to be lovely. And then we're going to have Black Fox Distillery on. Am I right?
You are right. Coming on later at some point. Dan sorted us out.
Yeah.
We've made the guests do the work.
Mm. Yes, we have.
It is good.
I've just borrowed a couple of people.
Yeah. Just right. Can you talk like a Canadian? Yeah. It's like American, but just say ooh.
Yeah. Just put an ice hockey top on. You've got it.
Love it.
Oh, dear me. Dan, in true traditional style, I've done you a Somerton rap. Would you like to hear it?
Of course.
I don't know if you two can do me a beat. You probably can't, so we'll just go for it a cappella. Here we go. It may not be the right beat though, Mike. What you're doing, that could put me off, couldn't it?
Is that working?
No.
Would you like a second one on top of it?
Yeah. Right, here we go.
Boom, boom, boom.
The Somerton Club.
Boom, boom, boom.
The Somerton Club, it's in play. For a 50 quid sub, they want to make your day. Ain't no whiskey fan on supermarket shelves. It's picked by Santa and packed by elves. Every 2 months, you get a new bottle. Don't overthink it. You're not Aristotle. Free postage included because they're decent folk. Plus Discord on Facebook to call people woke. You're welcome, Dan.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Do you know Duncan's unemployed? Yeah. It's got a lot of time.
We'll be
hands.
Soon at this rate, yeah.
Can I borrow that by any chance? I've got to figure out how we advertise ourselves, and I don't do it very well, so you can have a go.
Yeah, you're welcome.
By means of rap.
Yeah. Problem is, whenever I do that stuff, I always want to put an American accent, and then I decide it's a really bad idea, and so my voice just...
Do you want to do it again with an American accent? See how that goes?
Tell you what, it's relevant if you make it Canadian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Go for it.
I can't. Drake. We should do it to a Drake backing track.
I mean, I'm going to pretend I know who that is.
Drake is like a massive Canadian rapper, like hip-hop star. I mean, Drake
means
is...
a lot.
There's three big exports from Canada. One, Rush the Band. Two, Drake. And three, Trailer Park
Canadian,
Boys.
Canadian Club.
Yeah, Canadian Club as well. I don't mean physical products. I mean like arty products.
Trailer Park Boys. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Duncan, you come up with some good suggestions. That went more Sesame Street.
Yeah.
Someone recommended it to me and went, it's a Northern Irish show. I spent the first episode so confused and started looking online to see if I'd got the wrong thing.
Yeah, like, it's just a remake.
There's a lot of series of it. That's the only thing. It's a real commitment. If you're one of those people who want to watch everything, you've got to commit to a lot of time.
And there's an animated series. It's gone a bit silly.
Loads of specials. Yeah. It's
movies.
Pretty much endless.
But they're making money. You've got to like take it out off to them.
Pop. Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I'm on a screw cap. There's no pop in at the moment.
I can try. I bought the glass popper.
Oh yeah,
it's a little one.
I've got. I know we're on a slight detour here, but I've got to ask you: what is the coin on top of the bottle about? Is it like in the Joker, in Batman, is it Two-Face? Is that what he's called?
And
if you take the coin off, it's like it's a sort of live or die type thing. I haven't figured it out yet.
Have you taken it off? Because you only get 24 hours before you die if you haven't done the.
Oh shit! Yeah, this is what Somerton Club's really about.
Yeah, no one knows that we don't grow because I've slowly killed off two thirds of the whiskey drinkers.
Two thirds of the members.
I don't understand why subscriptions keep dropping every month by half.
They're not dropping. He just keeps it flat. Just keeps it flat. Yeah. It's just like one in, one out. That's the policy. People just don't know that's the policy.
But the one, talking about the coin, this is one of the things that makes Black Fox so awesome. On the back of it is a serial number. If you put the serial number into their website, it gives you the data about your cask.
Oh, right.
Including, which is one of the things I find so interesting about them, the temperature variation. Now, our bottling is bigger than one batch, I can't tell you exactly what's in that cask that was in yours, but one of the ones I looked at today, I think it was minus 42 to plus 40 degrees.
I have a question that I really want to ask them connected to that when we get to it, when we have them on in a little bit. So I'm excited to speak about that.
Why didn't you build a warehouse?
No, yeah. No, that isn't the question, but I mean, I sort of, you know, but a question connected to it. But
I might have a chance to sing again, but I can be like, what's in your cask?
What's in your cask? It is your, Mike, do you want to do proceedings?
Yes. And again, I will start by asking the guest. So Dan, what is in your glass?
What's in your glass? Dan? What is in your glass?
Hang on. We've done this the wrong way. Let's talk about the club first.
Oh, yeah.
Then you can say, this is the club bottle. That's going to be a more sensible way to listen to it, I reckon.
Why don't you do a short intro for yourself, Dan, and then we'll do what's in your glass. Yeah?
I'm Dan. I run a full bottle whiskey subscription, which every 2 months sends something unique, special, a surprise to whiskey drinkers' homes. The idea is that you don't know what's coming in advance, and I go and do all the hard work searching for whiskey so you get it cheap and if you bought it for yourself. And I'd like you to go, oh, did not expect that, as much as possible for many different reasons. Like there'll be one earlier in the year that, how the hell did you get it at that price? Another one is, what is that? I've never even heard of that. Cool. Well, I can't wait to figure out what that is. That, you know, each time is a slightly different experience.
Yeah.
That is what Somerton Whiskey Club is.
It's that, ooh.
Love it.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. I did actually have that recently, because when the bottle arrived and opened it up, I went, ooh.
Did you sit on it?
What on earth is that? What is this? And then, you know, obviously we've tried it and stuff, and we post our tasting notes and we really enjoy it. So.
Decent. So where I interrupted you, so Dan. Speaking of your club, what is in your glass?
What's in my glass is our latest club bottle, which came out the other day. It's from the Black Fox Distillery, SC11, single grain Canadian whiskey. And the grain is triticale, which is a hybrid of rye and wheat. So you get some of the rye, spicy herbal notes, but there's a mellowness to it. I saw someone recently describe it as similar to a high rye bourbon.
Yeah. I did actually say I didn't know the detail of that, but I did actually say it tastes a bit like a cross between a bourbon and a rye.
It may well be yours. Is that
don't take anything I'm saying. I'm just making it up. I mean, take some notes of someone that knows what they're talking about.
That's what all the tasting notes are.
It had a sort of making it up. A wine cask vibe to me as well. That's what I said. But really, good tasting notes are coming off it. Definitely very interesting for sure.
Yeah.
How about yourselves? What's in your glasses?
So I have gone for another grain whiskey, which we didn't plan. And it is the Baines Single Grain South African whiskey. And it is one of the cheapest, just best value whiskies you will get out there. I am Welsh. I am all about getting stuff for as low as I possibly can in terms of money. And this is a banger. You'll pick it up on Amazon for like 24 quid generally. You can obviously get it elsewhere, but sometimes it goes even lower than that on offer. And yeah, great whiskey, great distillery. The guys behind it, really, really lovely guys. Ex-cricketer. And yeah, he's a lovely dram. Yeah.
He's also a Sheffield Wednesday fan. And that's one of the things we talk about in the background is about Wednesday. It's really
he's a real hoot, that guy.
And ledge.
I learned absolute something ledge at the distillery when I went and visited them. And that was that the South African grain has a higher sugar content than American corn.
Right.
And that's one of the big impacts on their flavor and takes it away from the corn whiskey you get in America.
Okay. Yeah. Nice.
And they say, that's what they said, it means it comes off the still a lot sweeter and at the higher.
They probably get, I was going to say, more alcohol. If they're coming off more sugars, they should be getting more out of it.
Mm. Yeah. And
I thought that was 46%. It's only 40%. Either way, another 40, that's a good whiskey.
Part of the 40 club. I mean, you wouldn't think it was going to be stronger than 46%. At that kind of price coming over from South Africa, would you? I mean, that would be a minor miracle if it was.
Well,
because it's
for someone that thinks that deeply into transport and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
Easy go lucky. Yeah, yeah.
they only produce it in a different country, which is one of the things that blows me away about
this. It's only down the road, but.
Well, that's one of the things about that's nice about this kind of Black Fox release that we've been trying is obviously it's from Canada. Don't get to drink too much unique whiskey from Canada. And that's kind of exciting. Plus, it's from a farm in the middle of nowhere with wild temperature conditions and stuff. So it is cool. It's very nice to be able to drink, you know, whiskey from different countries.
What's in your glass, Dan?
Well, right now I'm drinking Aaron 10 from 2015. Because, you know, that's quite summery. It's light, isn't it? But I was lucky enough to go to a Japanese whiskey tasting thing organized by Matt, a.k.a. Let's Get Ready to Dramble, which was pretty cool. So we were whipping through some Japanese whiskeys the other day. And other than the Black Fox, I retried the Tokai Murray McDavid. Nick Gascoigne, no relation to Paul Gascoigne. He sent me no known relation to Paul Gascoigne. Could be, don't know.
Historically, who knows?
Who knows? He sent me the Tokai cask. I did a bit of a dram swap with him. And I've also been having a bit of the Loch Lomond Mizunara cask. Yeah. So that's basically what's in my glass. And in new tradition, what's been annoying me is the heat. I feel like I need to change t-shirts just when I walk to the fridge and open it.
I'm in here now and I was like, oh, the weather's cooled down a little bit today. So I'll just chuck a sweatshirt on, no t-shirt underneath because I'm ghetto. I am sweating buckets still. It's ridiculously humid.
Is that a t-shirt or a jumper?
That is a sweatshirt.
Why are you wearing a sweatshirt in the summer?
The sleeves rolled.
But why?
Huh?
Because you're... Why?
I got jeans on as well.
Why?
Hey, I'm ready. It's evening.
You're ready for winter, yeah.
Yeah, you got to dress up.
I'm in shorts. I got pink shorts on, t-shirt. That's it. That's all I'm going to... I don't get that.
Not going to a festival, mate.
Did you? Well, speaking about festivals, did you watch the one that everyone's been talking about with Guns N' Roses? Or did you not watch it? Glastonbury.
Begins with a G, yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, I have seen very little of Glastonbury. I've watched a bit of Elton John last night.
Yeah.
And that was it. I'll catch up with the bands I actually like in the next couple of weeks or so. It's the benefit of iPad.
Yeah, I'll be catching up as well. Do you see any of it, Dan, at all? Or did you not have time?
On Friday, I got to see the Royal Blood, Foo Fighters and Arctic Monkeys.
Right, nice.
That was quite a nice set. But I did try and watch again last night, and because I'd recorded it off of BBC, and I just kept on coming across bands I don't like.
Fair enough.
There was some random stuff on there, isn't there? Every year you go, yeah, this is the up and coming stage. You're like, that ain't going anywhere.
there's loads of good stuff that was on, but I was just going to say that there's a lot of big Guns N' Roses fans, and we were even thinking about going to watch Guns N' Roses at Hyde Park, but I was put off by the fact that Axl literally sounds like a cross between Mickey Rourke or the Bee Gees being tortured. He can't sing anymore. And obviously, you know, he was amazing. He was an incredible singer, but he's just gone, like completely gone. And the other thing I've been suffering, and I don't know if you two have to put up with this, but I'm quite conscious about the amount of units you're drinking in alcohol. And in the summer, I keep getting dragged down the pub to drink really bad lager. And then I'll be having a lager and thinking, that could have been a good pour of whiskey.
Such a good point.
That could have been a really good pour of whiskey, and I've just wasted 2.5 units on a pint of Coors. And I'm like, and then like, here's another pint. I'm like, that's 5 units.
Do you know
that
where
could
I
have
went
been three good whiskeys?
I went to a puppy daycare, like dog parents party, and basically was drinking Desperado all night. And I'm like,
what a waste.
Has not been drunk for a good number of years.
That's the tequila finish one, isn't it? Or something like that.
I woke up the next day like, that was a stupid idea. That has played absolute fury with my internals. I'm not going to lie.
But you know what I mean? Do you not think about that? Like if you have any kind of sort of awareness about the amount of units in alcohol you're drinking, and then you're drinking a drink that you're not really enjoying, and just thinking this is a waste of units, right?
You go into a pub, surely they have more than just lager.
Yeah, but it's that social thing, isn't it? I mean, I could have a Guinness. If it's like 30 degrees or 28 degrees, I don't necessarily feel like maybe I'd have a Guinness. It's a maybe, you know?
Yeah, I don't mind a beer.
It's that British lager culture.
Oh, no. In the winter, ales all day, but as soon as it gets like warm, I'm like, nope, I want rubbish lager.
I got into craft ale, but now it's like £3 a pint more for a craft ale than it is an old man ale. Like, I used to like that when I was a teenager.
Yeah, back on the old man stuff.
Yeah, did me in the park. I'll have a John Smith, please, darling.
Get me a Yuki Brown. Yeah, I agree with that. It's crafters.
Pay £9-10 for a pint of craft ale, or £6 for an old man ale.
£6.
I was going to say,
hey, this is not
Weatherspoons.
This is not a
do
tourist.
Some banging ale.
Not a tourism
bottles.
Advert for St Albans at the moment.
Well, no, that's London. Yeah. I was in London the other day. Yeah. I went and had a pint with a couple of mates. And I thought I did well at £5.75.
Yeah,
they were like, that's not bad.
Yeah, and they were 8-something. Like, yeah, it's because I went for the one with a silly name. You know?
Yeah.
How else do you describe to someone who's not an ale drinker? What do you want? Stupidest name, please.
Yeah.
I'll have the pint where the old man that's got no money is clearly sat next to the pump. I'll have one of those. Yeah. That's what I'm having.
But there is quite a big difference in the ABV. You know, the beers you're talking about, the kind of like old ales, are usually somewhere between sort of 3.5% and sort of push kind of 5%. Whereas all that fancy new IPA stuff or whatever is 7-8%, or certainly over 6%.
Not going to lie, yeah. You have also stumbled across the other reason why I've gone back to old man ale. I've realised I'm a lightweight.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's just a lot easier to start to have the 3% and 4% beers, because then I can have 4 with my mates and not think the world's ended.
I don't know where the point in your life when you just stop being able to just session, because that's, you know, you'd smash away like Stella's back in the day without even thinking about it. Now I'm like 4 beers. I am not feeling happy in that morning after. I am really struggling.
It's not just that, it's the volume, isn't it? We've talked about this before, but it's just too much volume. You know,
the belly bloats.
Oh. I think when you get into the habit of drinking good quality alcohol at home, like, you know, like good whiskey or good wine or the odd good beer, and you go out to a pub, generally it can be really disappointing because you're either paying through the nose for something you really enjoy, or you're compromising the quality on what you can drink. And I saw someone posting online about kind of corkage in like certain restaurants, and there's a Turkish locally where I live, and they will actually let you take whiskey in, so we can go and have like good quality Turkish food and take like a bottle of peated whiskey to have with us. Obviously we're drinking their beers, so it'll be like Efes or whatever. Don't mind having like 1 Efes or 2 Efes with a meal if I'm gonna have some whiskey as well, right? So I get it. We need to do Jeff Whiskey has shouted us out on picking 5 summer whiskeys, and so I thought we could do it all together, right? And also we need to do some Jeff Slaps shout outs, which I think just involves banging a bottle like this.
Treating a bottle like it's done something wrong.
Yeah.
It's where you need a wedding band just to get that extra clink.
I've got a wedding band.
Yeah, I can do that. I've got the, mine's too big for me, so I've got one of those little rubber things on the bottom.
That's your excuse for taking it off all the time.
No, it's the opposite.
You can't take it off.
Put it on so I can't get it off.
She shrunk it. She's like, what size finger are you? Like, I don't know, T. She's like, 2 sizes under that, please.
Yeah. It's definitely the ring that's been shrunk, not my fat fingers growing since getting married. Definitely not. There's one bottle slap from me.
Yeah, I bottle slapped the Aaron 10. Mike's just bottle slapped the Baines.
The Baines.
Baines. Bane.
Yeah, SC11.
Yeah, SC11, by the way. That's the closest whiskey I'm ever going to drink to some sort of gang-related postcode in East London. It's got, every time someone says SC11, I'm just thinking about graffiti and tagging.
Do you get me, fam?
Dan, why don't you go first? So you said you have one, what's your favourite summer whiskeys, favourite summer dram? So basically Jeff recommended 5 summer whiskeys. And the one that I remember that he picked was Orchard House by Compass Box. That's the one I'm going to say props to Jeff. I think that's a great shout out for a summer whiskey. The other 4 were good as well, but that's the one that...
I really like the Redbreast 12 that he suggested.
I'd go with the Lustau over the 12, I think. Mm. That would be
I'm going for the 12.
Was that his barbecue whiskey, the Redbreast? Is that the one he said he'd take to a barbecue?
Maybe.
Or like a party?
That's actually where I first had my first Redbreast 12 was at a barbecue at mine. I had a few whiskey.
Was Jeff there?
No, I wish he was, because I literally would have had that experience together. And that's why I have a Redbreast 12 in my collection, is because of that night. And it was in the middle of the summer. So I see it as a summer drink in that regard.
And is that your favourite summer whiskey?
No, favourite summer whiskey. As soon as you said we're doing summer whiskies, I instantly knew it's the bottle that Mike's got in his hand right now.
Right.
Oh, it's not.
No, not that one. Sorry, the other one had the Baines.
Oh, the Baines.
Single grain. Having that, I've been at the distillery and it was 40 degrees that day. Went back. Big glass of ice, Baines on top, phenomenal. It's distilled in a hot country and drunk in that country. You put it over ice and it just works on a proper hot day.
Oh, that's a nice tip.
I can't believe we've picked the same whiskey. I'm very happy with it. That would be my summer whiskey.
Hmm.
Between the sort of, I was trying to think of that. I can't remember the conditions that Jeff put on there, but it was essentially. Mine is Baines.
Right.
Then the Artist Blend by Compass Box.
Right, okay.
And obviously, I mention it most episodes.
Buffalo Trace.
Yeah. Somehow, finally managed to pick up a 45% ABV version on Amazon.
Is that a single cask one then?
No, it's just the exact same that we get in the UK, but not a 40.
Okay.
It's like, it's worlds apart.
I think I've only had the 45% one. I don't know if I've had the 40% stuff.
If you've had it in the UK, it's 40.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, mega. I was well happy to get that. That's decent. I
definitely have bought it in the UK. So, that's 3. What are your other 2 then?
Well, one was a cocktail, wasn't it?
Right.
So, old fashioned all day long.
Okay.
No questions. And not a peated one, though. So, it'd have to be, I'd go Wild Turkey 101 with your normal sort of old fashioned recipe. And that is very hard to beat. And again, a very cheap, cheap bourbon with a lot going for it. I can't remember the last category, but if I was going to go somewhere completely different from those ones and go for a peated Laphroaig 10, I would stick to a Laphroaig 10. You can drink it all year. And that would be my peated 40%. And yeah, you know what it's going to do. I'd be more than happy with that.
All right.
A summer dram of Laphroaig 10.
So what were the categories again? Barbecue, cocktail, the other 3? I mean...
So one you take to a barbecue. Right. I think one was just general summer whiskey, your cocktail, and I can't remember. I just made the rest up.
Right, okay. Well, I've gone for Tobermory 12. That's 46.3%. All of my whiskeys have a commonality in which they're around 46-ish% except one. And that's like pears, peaches, apples. It's malty, it's oily, it's coastal, stone fruit, dates, orange zest. Orange is a really good flavor to have in a summer whiskey, I think. Like kind of like citrus notes, more on the orange side than the lemon side. I put down the Redbreast Lustau. Again, it's 46%. You know, it's Oloroso from Bestega Lustau. You're getting like almonds, sultanas, oranges again, dates. You see there's a theme here, right? You know, it's like, it's got that substance to it. It's also a bit kind of milk chocolate, honey, walnuts, apples, poached pear. So something that's just got fruit in it, you know, maybe some oranges, some green fruits, maybe some more tropical fruits, like that type of thing at a good ABV. And both of those are non-peated. And then I've put down, because I'm always plugging this, the Cotswold Single Malt, because that's Bunjuriti ex-Burbs. I think it's got SDR and wine cask in the mix, less. It's 46%. It's more cereals. Again, it's orange notes, but you're getting a little lemon in there. It's a bit grassy, floral. It's kind of creamy. You're also getting some kind of like custard notes. So I think that's a really flexible one that you could put in most cocktails, really. I would go with a blood and sand cocktail. That would be my summer choice of cocktail. And I think you could put in that any really.
What is blood and sand? Again, blood and, I am not a cocktail.
So it's like man. It's like fresh orange juice with cherry brandy liqueur and Martini Rosso, right? I think they're the three ingredients. I have to double check it because it's been like 3 months since I've made it.
Yeah.
Right. But generally, I'll make a few of them in the summer when it's hot. You shake it all together over ice, pour it out, obviously with the whiskey as well. So it's an equal measure of each thing. So it'd actually be fresh orange juice, Martini Rosso, like the red martini, or might be Martino Verma. I have to check it. And then it's the cherry brandy liqueur, right? And then it's the whiskey, all equal measures, shaken together over ice, poured out, generally in a sort of a fancy glass. But you can put it in whatever, right?
Nice.
You know, you just serve it, serve
in
it
a
chilled.
Tumbler.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, I've also gone for Tamdi 15. And I'll tell you why. Because it's not just...
Is it because you're now out of contract? Because you haven't mentioned three podcasts?
No, seriously. But a lot of people have weddings in the summer. And people always say Christmas cake. But guess what else? Wedding cake, right? Wedding cake is often, you'll have the traditional wedding cake. And Tamdu, it's like vanilla, it's kind of like Christmas or wedding cake, whatever you want to call it. Again, oranges, apricots, almonds, raspberries. It's a great summer whiskey. Plus, I know it's expensive, but it is great to chuck over ice as well. Right?
You've stretched that one out, but I'm impressed with how you did it. Well done, sir.
And then my last choice, and this would be the barbecue choice, would be any first fill bourbon Campbelltown whiskey. Or specifically at the moment, it's not first fill. It's got a finish. It's the White Port Festival. But I think that's a really good one because that Glen Scotia Festival Edition, Orchard Fruits, it's coastal, sea salt, bit of smoke. You can't really go wrong. It's going to punch through your barbecue, but it's fruity as well. You could have it with any of the meals, you know, like with your dessert or your mains. Or, you know, find another Glen Scotia, which is first fill bourbon single cask or... You know, you're not going to be able to get hold of much Springbank or a Kilkerran bourbon cask. Any Campbelltown first fill bourbon would be my fifth one to go to.
Decent.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So there you are.
Yeah.
Jeff, you have been slapped back.
You're now making me think of so many other ones.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, like Stowning maple syrup rye cask. Right. It's just so sweet. And because in the summer, I think sweet. Either... light and fruity floral or just sweet, and that is the sweetest whiskey I've ever had. It smells like maple syrup, and the one we've got is 60-odd%, so it does just taste of maple syrup. It's got some fire to it. it's just that smell, that first bit when you open it up, you're like, that's maple syrup. Like that's not maple syrup whiskey, that's maple syrup. So sweet. Then another one is McMira Lava, because I'm a big fan of Sweet Peep. It's I think it's port cask peated whiskey, and for me that's barbecue straight up. That is my favorite way of doing peat, is with a bit of sugar in there, and it just reminds me of a barbecue in the summer, bit of brisket. And then probably something like Woodford Reserve, just because I drank that as a 20-something year old over so many summers. Bit of ice.
You were drinking good stuff as a 20-year-old.
You could pick most half decent bourbons as a summer whiskey, I think, really, because they're sweeter, aren't they? You know, I didn't pick one because I knew Mike would, but I had money on down the local bookies that you were going to say Eagle Rare 10, but you didn't. So
no, I know. I was like, I've embargoed myself again saying it.
There's nothing wrong with that. I think it's good to have a whiskey that can be flexible and used in different situations, right? I mean,
But I'm not contractually signed up like you to speak about Tamdi. So I'm like, I have to give it a break now.
I'm not actually contractually signed up, just in case anyone wonders. I wish I was.
There are other whiskey brands available.
So, is it Dan? Do you want to introduce us to Black Fox Distillery?
Yeah. Hi.
Well, we've been joined.
Yeah, we've been joined by Barb and John from Black Fox in Saskatchewan, Canada, who make phenomenal whiskey, but unique unicorn whiskey, I would say as well, because there's so many parts to it. You just go, what? That's how you do it? Is that possible? And the answer is yes. And it's not just yes, it's wow, yes. So Barb and John are the masterminds, the expertise, the knowledge, but also the people trying to learn more and just be better at what they're creating. And that mentality is phenomenal, particularly when your start point is being some of the best known farmers in the world. So if you're making the grain yourself, and then you're involved in every single part of the process up until the point it gets shipped out in a bottle, generally, if you're trying, you know, you've got a chance of making something really, really great. And that is what Barb and John do.
What an intro.
That was a better, you should write for us.
Yeah.
That is far better than what we're going to come up with. How are you doing, guys? Can you hear us? Are you all good?
Yeah, we're all good. You guys sound so professional. Here we are with the cheap laptop and sitting in.
It's right. We're going to tell people that you were actually you're on a space shuttle at the time. And you were actually floating, and you were just talking into a speaker attached to the side of the craft. You're at zero gravity, and so it was all very impressive.
Yeah, well, it's very good because Canada developed an arm for the space shuttle, so you could just say this is the Canada arm.
There you go.
That's it.
It was the drinking arm.
So we obviously, thanks so much for making time to come on and say hello. Dan's done a fantastic intro for you there. So we've tried the SC11. We really like it. And we've done tasting notes on it. And what we thought, because obviously you produce whiskey and you have a farm, I don't know. Would you like to say something? Would you like to do talk a bit about
your
farm
chance to big yourselves?
And then we're going to ask you a few random questions about Canada.
I'll make it a little bit easier than talk about anything. How about what it means to farm your own grain from very start to finish, and then to create, you know, ferment and distill it? What different areas do you have to think about compared to a standard distillery that doesn't have to worry about being a farmer right now, when there's a hell of a lot of stuff to do outside because it's growing season?
Well, you know what? I'm really excited that we're starting with the farming part, because I want to tell you that I hate to say it, but we have an unfair advantage farming grain here in Saskatchewan. So we are in what is considered a desert climate. We are hundreds, if not thousands of miles from the nearest large body of water. So we do not understand ocean faring terms or anything like that. But what it does for us is it gives us a really unique location to produce some of the grains that are sought after around the world. We have incredibly long days, which you guys are experiencing in the UK right now too, because we're similar latitudes. But what we have that's different from you is very cool nights. So what that tends to do is concentrate flavors a lot for us. And that's what gives us our unfair advantage.
Right. To like build on that a little bit. So when we got into the business, we figured, well, what do we have that's really unique? And the weather and the terroir, when you think about wine, is, you know, everybody dreams, oh, I've got the southern slope in France and I'm going to grow grapes on it. And the same concept here is that here we actually have something that's really cool. And as farmers, typically throughout our career, you grow this stuff and you sell it by the ton. It goes into onto a train, it goes to port, and somebody else makes a whole bunch of money off it. So we figured, this is an opportunity to kind of strike back. And making whiskey just seemed to be the perfect storytelling device on saying, here, this is what you can do in our environment. This is what makes it different. And how do we just keep, you know, building that story up? And then we get to talk about sustainability and farming and all those things that we really enjoy.
What? So how long have you been doing it?
Yeah, how long have you been producing the whiskey for?
So we've been producing whiskey for 8 years.
Yeah.
We've been farming for close to 40.
Wow.
And just another good piece of trivia, we were named Canada's Outstanding Young Farmers from a long time ago.
I thought you were going to say the year there. You roll back on the year. Yeah. So
this year, there's a lot of old farmers out there. You're like, yeah, we're still knocking it. We're young.
What I've learned so far.
Exactly.
What I've learned so far is you can't write coastal on the bottle because you're in the middle of a desert somewhere. And in addition to being in the middle of the desert, there's wild temperature swings. So I wondered, and maybe you know, maybe you don't know, maybe Dan knows. Is there any other distilleries in the world that experience where the whiskey is stored outside, not warehoused, I think because it's under the skies, right? Which experiences kind of swings of sort of 80 centigrade over time.
Huge.
Do we know?
I've never heard of it. I've never heard of anyone leaving full casks outside.
They get nicked if it was around here.
So not intentionally, anyway. I think at one time it was probably more or less a common practice until everybody started thinking, oh, we can reduce our losses by putting it into a rick house. But even as soon as you put it into a rick house, there's such a thermal mass that you don't get, the individual cask doesn't actually cool down at night. And just it was kind of by happenstance that we started this way. It wasn't that, oh gee, we're smart right off the hop, but it's we ended up that here we just didn't have enough money to put up another warehouse. So we started this and we kind of liked it, and it adds that a little bit of French, a little je ne sais quoi of here, what happens when a barrel gets to be minus 42 one day, and the next day it warms up to,
minus 20.
Minus 20 or minus 10. Yeah. And so what we've done now, we've actually put probes into some test barrels so that we can track the temperature of the liquid and the pressure on the barrel and all that kind of stuff. And it's very interesting.
How do you guys actually stay warm when it's like minus 40? I mean, the coldest I've ever been was minus...
Whiskey.
Minus 20 in South Korea for a couple of days. I just remember thinking I needed to have like under trousers on, two pairs of trousers, and then the cold gets in your eyes and you're like, I feel like my eyes are freezing, and you're just walking down the street. You're not even
I went skiing in Banff in Canada, and I was going up one of the slopes and scratched my head and unclipped my goggles when I was on the ski lift, and they went, and my eyes had frozen shut by the time I got to the top. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing? But yeah, it's mad. Have you ever had any major disasters with casks if they're left outside?
Yeah, we had a couple of the barrel suppliers that we had when we first started. The heads weren't made quite as strong as what you would want. And basically, it creates enough vacuum. It'll warp the wood up and then you lose a whole cask kind of a thing. So we've gone to a different supplier. Now we're actually going to start making our own casks, like through a different, a friend of ours who has a construction company, and he's bought all the gear to start. And so we bought some oak from Ontario. We're letting it season out. So in a couple of years from now, we should be able to start making our own.
Oh, no
and
make way.
Heads a little bit heavier.
I have a really serious question to ask before I forget is, have you considered playing the casks rush?
Absolutely.
Because my understanding is that everyone's obsessed with rush in Canada. They're like an absolute national treasure. And then you can market it as not only terroir and the rest of it, you could say the whiskey listened to rush.
Could be the rush, but Canada's got so much talent. Yes. And like Stompin' Tom Connors, I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but... Boy, I tell you, that would make some awfully unique whiskey.
But seriously, though, are you Rush fans or are you not? Because I kind of get this impression that everyone in Canada is very proud of Rush. I haven't actually ever been to Canada. It's one of the countries I haven't been to. So it's like a me question.
Rush is very popular. They've got some good songs, as does everybody. But we tend to be more of generalists and like everybody for different reasons. So...
Are you sure you're not in politics? Is there?
This was like a very PC answer.
Oh my God, it's very dodgy.
You're like Drake and Rush equally. It's cool. All right. Yeah, one day Drake, one day Rush, and then. Have you got animals on the farm? Is it an arable farm? But do you have any animals there or
two
pets?
Cats. That's it.
Cats. Two cats.
Two cats.
No, I'm afraid I don't have the patience for animals, although that is part of our background. So Barb is actually technically an animal nutritionist. That was her university training. And so we know the industry quite well, but I've, like I say, I don't, I have no patience for that.
Mm.
No.
This whiskey you've made is very rich, isn't it? It really, very full bodied. We felt like it was somewhere between this SE11 single grain.
Triticale.
Thank you, Dan. Yeah, it's super rich. It feels like somewhere between a bourbon and a rye. And I said it kind of has like a sort of wine cask vibe to me. And after a few days of being open, there's a slight strange note in the finish, and that sort of goes. And then it really becomes quite like a rounded whiskey, I think. It's just kind of quite powerful. And whatever tasting that you're getting, because it's very subjective. But ultimately, the right kind of balance between sweet and sour.
So it's interesting when you look at the genetics of triticale. So it's a wheat and a rye hybrid. You actually get flavor components coming from both the parent plants. So you have that one seed and it's got those flavorings of rye, but there is those undertones of, you know, the grassiness, the sweetness that you would expect from a wheated bourbon. And it's quite interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. I think my, just to dive into my tasting notes, I think on the palate, I said I got a bit of pine, undiluted orange squash or orange concentrate, as you might say over there. Bit of an effervescence. There's a herbal note in there, which I said was a bit sort of like vermouthy, sort of like martini, but then ginger and grassy. So yeah, exactly as you said.
Mm. I said it was dark cherries, oranges, caramel and porridge on the nose. Light and fizzy on the palate, green grapes, sweet and bitter orange, some herbiness. Semolina pudding, it made me think, kind of like a bit of a muted sweetness. And I said the finish was kind of plum sour, orange liqueur, lots of caramel, white refined sugar, and then a slight oaky note develops. And yeah, somewhere between kind of sweet, bitter and sour. But
loads of cigar tobacco on the finish.
Oh, yeah. Lovely. Maybe.
I do like this way, because like with bourbon, you know, minimum 51% corn, but then you have the rye, this, and you have all these mixtures. Instead of mixing the grains together, why don't we take one step earlier and then the grain genetically and go, this is what I want. So
you've taken the blending out of it. It's genius.
Yeah, I love this. Can you put cherries into grains, please? So that's the one little bit I'd like to have more of in whiskey. It's just
more cherry.
Yeah.
You would be amazed to know what a plant breeder can do, because when they make a cross, they'll end up with 100 different grains out there and off the one cross. And basically it's up to whoever's doing the breeding to choose what they like. So typically they're driven by the economics they want. More yield and more efficient and stuff like that. And we've been really concentrating on flavors. So this variety in particular was an old fella that had done a bunch of plant breeding here in Saskatchewan. They were actually trying to select grain for distilling. And they developed this grain, and then they kind of forgot to do the marketing behind it. And so it sat on somebody's shelf, and nobody grows it. It's quite interesting. So there's absolutely opportunity. And Daniel, you asked, like, you know, the idea of going straight from grain to distilling and, you know, the different complexities of it. I think farmers kind of tend to make good distillers because we're used to thinking really long term. So when we look at here, we want to change our plans and the way that we farm, you're looking at a 10-year kind of a plan all the time. And I know a lot of my friends who have gotten into distilling, you talk to them about making whiskey, and it just scares the pants off them because they can't think of what they're doing next year, let alone what they want to be doing.
Yeah.
You could say maybe arguably either farmers or engineers make good people to make whiskey because they're both into planning. Yeah. I noticed, is that the Canadian flag on the bottom of the bottle there?
It's the maple leaf. Not a problem, but also when you look forward at the base of the...
A mountain range.
Yeah. It's not mountains because Saskatchewan doesn't have mountains. We have Saskatchewan snowdrifts. That's where we are, because they're not big enough to be mountains. So that was the intent there.
This bottle is actually really nice, and I think would make a lovely decanter to keep after you've finished the whiskey. So it would be one that I won't be recycling. I will be keeping as a decanter, basically. Yeah.
So I'd love to hear your thoughts about the coin on top and the serial number and the ability to kind of look back in the history of the whiskey. Like Daniel,
I haven't used it yet. I didn't. So
I mean, Dan told us about it on the call earlier. Yeah. And I was like, what? Because obviously Duncan was very kind to just pour me some. Yeah. There's no coin in mine.
So I have to be a little honest here in that I didn't
read letter.
No, I wasn't going to say that. I was just going to be really honest. So for me as a whiskey drinker, I do try a lot of whiskeys. Like I really appreciate the story, and I think that, for example, there's like Darth Mill in the UK, or like Kilhoman. These are kind of farm based distilleries, and I really like their stories as well. But really, what matters to me more than the story is the product. And if I love the product and I love the story, then it's a winner, if you see what I mean. And so I do really like the product. But then I also like bourbons and ryes. So I'm in the marketplace, right? I'm in the zone. At least I'm in the right ballpark, as we say, right? So I will scan it and try it. And I think that it's great if whiskey is more kind of traceable generally, but that isn't my number one reason for wanting to get whiskey. What I do really value about what you guys do is the sustainability element of it, right? And I think if places are more sustainable in everything, packaging, experience, not being wasteful, that I buy into as a consumer, right? You know, places that do too much packaging, I think is a bit unnecessary. And
I think one of the things, though, with the coin and the serial number is the reason you don't treat it at the same level as the other bits is because no one else does it.
Am I going to lose a nail getting this coin off, by the way?
No, I just did. I spent longer trying to get the glue off than I did the coin off the top because I wanted the coin without the glue. But no one goes to this level of detail. You get to know how many hours of sunshine were directed at your cask over its lifetime. You get to know the very maximum, the peak, top and bottom temperature. These are things we just don't get told by anyone.
So where do I go to type this in? I've got the serial number. Do I go to the website?
Yes, correct.
I love it. See, these things, like, I know a lot of people we do tastings with are like absolute whiskey nerds, and they would be, if your coin could tell them what shoe brand you were wearing on the particular day you were like looking at the cast, they would love it. Yeah. So there are people out there that
people love it. That's
well
true.
Love, absolutely adore all the information they can get hold of, and they will just absorb everything and really buy into it. So that's, yeah, anything like that. I know other people do QR codes and things, but especially with that coin, it does sound, you know, it sets you out differently from anyone else, and no one else is doing it. And you've got a little memento, which is always cool to keep.
So it's interesting because, like, when we started this business, 90% of Canadian whiskey is made from American corn. And we said, well, geez, that's not really Canadian whiskey. And we used to ship, when we first started farming, a lot of our barley would go to Scotland for whiskey. You know, you're selling rye. We are an exporting nation. But to be importing that much corn and just making, basically, you're making bad bourbon and trying to, you know, sell it as Canadian whiskey kind of seemed a bad move to us. So it became all about here, what can we actually grow in our field? So we use beyond triticale, we're using rye, we've done oats, wheat, but these are things that actually fit into our crop rotation that the farmers are growing out in the field. So the story then becomes around here, what are good farming practices? What's actually being grown? What are the resources that you have? And that's, it's been a really fun experience trying to develop a real sound, you know, kind of methodology to what you're trying to produce.
What do you think is like the longest maturation you'll get away with the way it's aged? Do you think you're just going to lose everything if it goes over a certain period?
Well, I think right now my gut feeling is like we've had some, you know, right from the very first, and I would say it's starting to get a little bit too oaky. We were talking about that with Dan this morning.
It's also because we use new oak. We don't use used barrels. We always use brand new barrels. Yeah.
So we're probably going to start exploring here after we disgorge a barrel. We'll start
do some first fills.
yeah, do some first fills. And then, you know, as you go forward, that's the interesting part of this business. It takes so long to see what the effect is going to be. We've got some that we put into, we had gotten some Grenache casks a couple of years ago that we're going to try and keeping. We put 5-year-old whiskey into that, and that was 2 years ago. And we're going to see how that works out. And now it's about playing around, but I have a gut feeling that 5 to 7 years is going to be kind of that sweet spot, because it's still going to pick up the grassy notes and some of those things. And I think those things will age out and make the whiskey, it'll taste older, but I think it'll taste less interesting. And I think interesting is better, trumps older.
That's it. You pull it when it's ready, basically. And that's the best way to be. Don't focus on the age. Yeah, that's really good.
I've actually got here. I've managed to get the certificate of provenance up. So it says the serial number. I've got that, which is, I won't read it out. But then, and the minimum storage temperature is -42.5. The maximum storage temperature is 40.1. Hours of bright sunshine, 14,412.9, very specific. Crop year was 2014. The grain type we've already said, which is Tricolore. Is that right? Did I say that right? Probably not. I'm not an expert in grains.
I want you to say it again.
The one beginning with T. It was distilled by Jay Coat. That's yourself, right? That's one. That's yourself, yeah. That's and me. Then the cask type is Quercus Alba. Finishing cask and not applicable. And Angel's share was 5.38% per annum. There you go. So I've located it. There you go.
Yeah, we find it quite. No, that's it. So in about 2 weeks there will be a different certificate with more information. So
don't lose your point.
And you can talk a little bit more. Daniel's been kind of giving us some coaching on saying.
What other information?
This is, you know, you may find it ordinary, but other people are going to find it.
Whiskey's known in me.
Yeah.
When I got asked what my opinion was, I was going to say, I want more. I've got one question I haven't asked you guys before. Are there any other grain hybrids you'd like to experiment with? Either they're out there already, or is there a grain hybrid that you think would be really interesting to try to make whiskey out of?
Actually, just hold on.
This was set up.
No, because we're now getting into me being a nerd again. This is my favorite.
I know what he's going to bring. This is kind of exciting because it hits a lot of different fronts, from sustainability right through to the hybrid flavors to everything else. And it's something that's rather unique. I was remiss. I've forgotten that you were going to. Yeah.
So if you're not farmers, this may not mean much, but can you see that? So
some grass.
Yeah, so that's exactly what it looks like. So this is the latest, greatest, innovative thing that's going on in farming and plant breeding right now. So this is a perennial ryegrass that we're trying to make it to have grain quality. And the wonderful thing about it is that the plant will last for 10 or 15 years. So the farmer goes out, and instead of having to disturb the soil and replant every year, he just goes in and harvests it. Like, it's kind of like letting the lawn in front of your house to grow and being able to get the grain.
So it's like apples. Once a year, you shake the tree.
Absolutely. So we've got access to a little bit of it this year. By next year, hopefully, we have enough that we can actually make a run of whiskey with it. But there's so many things happening in the plant breeding space, like when you connect all this to agriculture, because there's the whiskey that you get, but then how about the end products that you get as well? Now we've got plant breeders that are able to develop, you know, specific proteins that we'll be able to salvage out of our just, you know, the spent grains and stuff like that, that can go into either into the medicinal market or into the health food market. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff, and being much more environmentally friendly. So again, this stuff like this takes, this will be 20 years from now. So it'll be something my kids will.
It's crazy. You're mixing like the absolute latest sort of genetic technology with what is one of the oldest traditions going as well. You've got best of both.
When you look at the history of whiskey, it was at one time, it was a very agrarian kind of a move, especially here in North America, because it was all about, here, we're too far away from any markets. Let's make whiskey out of it. And then at least we only have to put two barrels onto the wagon instead of having eight horses and eight wagons of grain going, you know, through a bunch of old bad trails. So it's very interesting. Like, the history has kind of come full circle and saying, you know, ours is one example of making whiskey, but we could be making pasta, we could be making, you know, anything. Right. But the whole idea is, what do you have in your own reach? What can you excel at? And, you know, doing something with it. And I think if people thought that way, you would end up with a little bit more sustainability, because there's some places in the world you just shouldn't be making some things, because the environmental impact is huge.
And I mean, that new crop, that could change farming, because there's so many people that are struggling year on year to get through that harvest, and then one thing goes wrong at any point, that's them done. And they're not making, they might be hardly make any profits anyway. If you take all that cost of digging it up and putting you in, and blimey,
Anyway, so that's kind of Daniel.
It's cool.
There's lots of interesting stuff happening in the egg space that we'll want to kind of continue on. All of our friends, obviously, they're farmers and growing all these unique things. There's always a lot of pressure for us to try a lot of new stuff. It's tough being a small distillery. You can do some cool stuff, but you can't do too much. You just can't afford to. But do more than what the big guys do, because the big guys, they just want to do it like they did it 20 years ago
or 40 or 60.
Well, you go into a separate set of needs. The big guys, the distillery is a factory, and what you're aiming to do is to increase your production relative to your inputs. And that's perfectly understandable, and you need that in an industry, otherwise we couldn't ever all drink whiskey.
Correct. Oh, absolutely. And yet it has quality implications that you wouldn't think about, you know, like recycling and being efficient. You end up taking those end cuts, and you're always pushing where you think the customer is going to be happy with the quality of the whiskey coming out. Where you get some of the new entrants into the business, and they're saying, "Well, I don't care how much it costs me to make this barrel of whiskey. I'm just going to aim for making the best barrel of whiskey that I want to." Right? And thank goodness we've got some of those guys starting in the business, because they'll change everything, just like the craft brewers have changed the beer business.
Let them take the risk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're in that area, because one of the first times I ever met you both, you said, "We want to make the best whiskey." That was it.
And so we know we'll never make it, but we're going to keep striving for it every batch. That's every day we're going to try and do a little bit better and just, you know, get closer and closer. It's a pretty elusive target.
Yeah, because even if you made it the next day, you could make an even better one.
That's right. Exactly. That's the idea.
Well, and everybody's palate is a little bit different. Yeah. And so what's person's best is not the other person's best. So it's
there's no best whiskey in the world. There's just lots of whiskey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The last whiskey the Somerton Club sent out is the world's best whiskey at that point in time.
that's the gospel good, according to Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah. It lasts for 2 months, and that is the world's best whiskey.
Whiskey timeline and the Somerton Club. And after that, only Somerton Club bottles existed in the world.
Yeah.
Issue will be as we write it.
Precisely.
As it was.
When we got into this business, we weren't by far whiskey experts. We enjoy a drink of whiskey every once in a while, but that's half the fun of what we're doing now, is learning and connecting, going, seeing other distilleries, seeing what they're doing. Yeah. And it makes it a little bit more interesting, because you have a very open mind on what whiskey can
love
be.
It. Yeah. Love it.
I just happened to marry a guy with a good palate. That's my
claim. Beautiful.
All right. Well, look, you know, John and Bob, you know, thanks very much for joining us today. We really appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Well, you're very welcome.
Thank you. And we look forward to seeing you here at 100%. Black
Hawk. I've literally never been to Canada. It's on my list of countries that I really must visit. I've been to a lot. I've been to like 65 towards 70. So it's not like I don't travel. But I've just never been to Canada. So... Yeah.
There you go.
Now you've got a reason to go. world's best whiskey right now.
You see, you need to change that Somerton website.
He's in Canada.
The new world's best whiskey. You could have your own awards.
Just complete rebrand.
Every 2 months, you run a new award, and guess what? Somerton wins.
We've got 6 awards to give away this year. But yeah, thank you very much for coming on. It's been lovely talking to you. And just keep doing what you're doing and experiment, go wild. And I'd love to see how that new grain works out for you.
Well, and same goes to you guys. It's nice to see guys like you taking the time out of their week to do a podcast and let people kind of join in on the journey of exploring new flavors and stuff like that. It does a good service to a lot of people because that is their entertainment. That's part of their drinking whiskey, right? Yeah. So on you guys, well, it takes a lot of work.
It does.
And you guys are extremely professional.
No, nice, I mean, look, it's the first time that's ever been said.
Yeah, that's very, very kind of you. It's usually a bit more degenerate than this, but it's been...
I got a tear.
But look, I mean, from our perspective, I mean, the same for you two to take the time out to come on, Dan as well. Mm. Dan's going to stay on for a bit longer. We're going to just rip Dan a bit more. And then, you know, also to be trying this whiskey and hearing the stories, you know, look, it's a beautiful thing. So really, thanks very much. And I actually really liked your website as well. I'd already been on it. And I found the certificate, by the way, just by Googling the words. And Google always takes you to the exact page. You know, and...
I can help. Whiskey certificates at the bottom of the page. Just if anyone listening, it's, bottom of the page, you get your card, bottom of the page, whiskey certificate.
Under the logo.
Yeah. I found it. Neither of you, can either of you two sing, John or Barb? Can you two sing?
No? Good Lord.
Yeah, you can't sing. Not. That's such a shame. Because I would have got you to do something. It's okay.
No, actually,
Dan, can you sing? No,
nope.
That's a no.
No, he cannot. Lovely.
All right, guys. So
quality.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. Take care.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys. Yeah, there's one thing I'd like to add. Everyone should follow Black Fox Farm and Distillery on social media.
And just quickly looking. So on Twitter, they are at Black Fox Spirits, and Instagram, they are Black Fox _ Farm. So yeah, go and have a check them out. Thank you once again for listening. That's going to be the end of episode 15. We're going to split this up into 2 episodes again because we have talked our rear ends off. So, yeah, thank you to Dan for popping on. We'll catch up with you in the second half. Thank you to John and Barb for coming on. Thank you for Duncan, as always, to be my co-host. Check us out online at Honest to a Malt on Twitter, Instagram, and all those other good things. Check out the website, honesttoamalt.com. Please, if you do like the podcast, give us a like, give us a review, give us a subscribe, do us a favor, spread the word of the malt. But thank you very much, and we will catch you on the next one. Take care, guys. Bye, bye, bye.